Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out. Use it to your advantage and go there often. It's free. All you got to do is show up, and you don't even have to tell us who you are. No login, no password, no barrier to entry. You just go there and use all the resources that we've been creating for you now for almost 9 years. To your little heart's content, so check it out when you get a chance. Maria Coyne is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. She's with us right now, our new friend. She's Executive Vice President with Key Bank, but also Key for Women, which is another division of Key Bank. We're going to get her to tell us about that in a little bit. Maria, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you here. Now, tell us about Key for Women.
Well, Jim, Key for Women is a program that supports women business owners in many ways. You know, largely it's about access to capital, but it's not just about access to capital. It's about smart ways to use that capital. So through our Key for Women Club, we provide access to ongoing education, networking events, different opportunities to meet with other businesswomen, other experts in small business, just to help you grow your business and become truly sustainable and long-lasting.
You know, men and women all have things that they care a lot about, and men like their golf clubs or their shotguns, and women like other things, don't they?
Absolutely.
This is a great day in history. 1845, the U.S. government announced that the end of shoe rationing. Now, was that a great day for women or what?
There must have been parades in the streets, Jim. All I can imagine is that a cry of relief must have gone up from every woman in America at that time.
I tease my wife about shoe shopping, and then that lasts about as long as it takes her to get my golf clubs out of her mouth. You know, my golf club purchasing stories out of her mouth, and so I have to shut up about the shoes then. But seriously, and they don't call me the king of Segway for nothing, Maria. Women business owners have there are things that they have to deal with that men don't always have to deal with, and that's one of those is access to capital. Now, it's getting a lot better. In fact, it may almost be a thing of the past, but it hasn't always been, has it? There have been barriers in the past for women getting the capital for their small business.
Yeah, it hasn't always been equal, and I think one of the really remarkable changes and one of the things that's very gratifying to me is that we now talk more about usage of capital as opposed to access to capital.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, women didn't have access to those traditional business networks and didn't have good advice about putting a loan package together. And in many cases, and I hate to overgeneralize, but a lot of these things are documented trends.
Yeah.
In many cases, women were just much better at bootstrapping, mm-hmm. and felt it was detrimental to borrow.
Well, so, but the thing is they grew their business slower too.
They grew their business much slower, and that's exactly what we found in talking with some of our clients and some others that have been in business for 20 plus years. They come back and tell me, "Oh, boy, Marie, you know, if I had just had that line of credit, if I had just borrowed to buy one more piece of equipment, if I had just, mm-hmm. I could have grown my business that mm-hmm. much faster."
But when they emerged when they started getting some critical mass, they were basically debt-free, and so that made them a lot stronger. But unfortunately, a lot of women, it took them too long, and so they actually didn't emerge as a business with critical mass. But let me ask you a question. I think this is a 21st century question. Do you think that women are still intimidated by the process? Before they even go get a loan, before they even, you know, do anything about it, their attitude is, well, you know, I'm going to meet some resistance there at the bank because I'm a woman. Do you think there's still some of that?
There may be some of that lingering. I think.
Well, let's dispel that right now. What do you think?
I think it's more about women like a lot of information before they make a decision, and to the extent that they don't have a lot of good information about, mm-hmm. say, how a credit decision is made, they feel a little uneasy. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that they can get the information they need and be very prepared, I would say it's no longer an issue.
The male ego helps men to do things in a more aggressive way, I think, maybe when they're not even completely prepared. Whereas I think you're right. I think women are more likely to be more prepared. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that as long as they ultimately get to the bank.
Exactly. And that's what we're all about. We're all about helping them get prepared.
Well, and let me tell you something else about women getting prepared and why it's a good thing, why it's really one of their attributes. Research shows, Maria, and I think you guys probably know this, that women repay their loans at a higher rate than men.
Women are statistically a better credit risk, which is kind of ironic.
Say that again.
Women are statistically a better credit risk. They exhibit lower riskiness in small, at least in the small business arena.
You used the word irony, and that it is ironic, isn't it?
It is.
Over the years, how resistant some of the good old boy walnut paneled office banks, from 30 yes. years ago. There's a lot of irony there, isn't there?
There certainly is.
Yeah.
And I work with plenty of women who remember getting doors shut in their face many years ago. And, of course, that was before I was a banker.
I know. Well, it was before you were born, Maria. But
right.
but the thing is that, I've had many of those women on the show. Lillian Vernon, for example, and a number of other women who were pioneers. They literally are, they help pay for the environment that women find themselves in today.
It's true that we owe a lot to our mm-hmm. forebears, foremothers.
So Key for Women having said all that we've said, why did you feel that Key for Women needed to be established?
Well, we had really been working with women business owners for very long, but we saw the tremendous growth and dynamic activity going on in the women's business market, and we really wanted to elevate and kind of highlight the importance of this segment and really kind of formalize all of the great grassroots efforts that we had going on throughout our footprint and say, let's really take this activity across the country and let's help women get to that point where they realize that there is a resource there to help them grow their business and to use capital appropriately and to really be sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what your footprint is, by the way, KeyBank footprint.
We're in 13 states from Maine to Alaska. So starting out in the west, we would go Alaska, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Utah, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio.
Almost basically Canadian and contiguous states that are contiguous to states that are connected to the Canadian border.
Kind of the top half
across
of the country.
They wear a lot of sweaters at KeyBank, folks. It's cold up there in the wintertime. 20 after, I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back with our new friend Maria Coyne. She's with KeyBank. Stay with us. You're in an awful thing. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate, and we're having a great visit with our new friend, Maria Coyne. And she's executive vice president with Key Bank. It's a bank across the northern half of the United States. If it touches Canada border or a contiguous state to one of those states, it's probably a Key Bank state. Would that be safe to say, Maria?
That's a pretty good summary, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you can use that, by the way. You can use in your marketing material. No charge. You don't have to attribute it to me. Maria, one of the things that I know you guys like to talk about is not just loaning money to customers, to small business owners, not just getting them financial products like checking accounts, things like that. And I want to thank you for these other things that you do, including helping them with their benefits. And I know you and I are fellow travelers with regard to health savings accounts, HSAs. I think that we're going to look back, Maria, not only from the standpoint of what it's done for the individuals and for the companies, but I think there's a dividend that this nation will acquire over the next 20 years. I think we'll look back 20 years from now and we'll compare HSAs almost to the Social Security enactment. What do you think?
I think that's a pretty good prediction, Jim. I think that when we look at what our small business owners struggle with today, and, you know, managing health care costs is certainly among them, but many of the corollary issues like finding and retaining good employees can in many ways be tied back to this health insurance issue.
And the overall benefits picture that can offer.
The overall benefits picture, and particularly, you know, some of the work that I do with women business owners. Women business owners seem even more focused on health and welfare benefits for whatever reason.
They're nurturers.
I think
You know, there's no quandary about that.
And
I know these women. I interview them, and I know them personally. I interview them all the time. It's not that guys don't love their employees.
Right.
Just women just think more about it.
They really view them as family, and they really feel this responsibility to take care of them. And at the same time, you know, we know, depending on whose study you look at, we know that somewhere close to 50% of all small businesses, call it 10 or fewer employees, do not offer health insurance. So it's a quandary.
It is, and it's difficult. And it's not that those people are being mean. They just don't have the capital. They don't have the critical mass yet. And that's the reason why HSAs are going to be, if the more people know about them, we own HSAs here in my business.
Yep.
And it's really helped us a lot. But one other thing that I'd like to stick in here is small business health plans.
Yes.
We need those. We don't have access to those yet. But Maria, when we have small business health plans, it won't do away with HSAs. They'll still be necessary.
It'll just be complementary.
It's exactly right. So that's very important. What are some other, now how does KeyBank get involved with HSAs?
Well, we actually have an HSA product that we're going to start offering in January, but at this point we're really in the advice to our small business owners phase. And I think what we've seen in nearly every case, and there's certainly plenty of third-party survey work that supports this, is that employers, you know, can cover a good chunk, call it 80% of the premiums, and contribute more than, say, $500 to a HSA and still spend less than they would with a traditional non-HSA eligible plan. So the work that we're doing with our small business owners, employing our own HSA product, often using outside consultants to say, let's just take an objective look at this, we're still coming out ahead at the end of the day.
Well, and here's the other thing that you're doing, and I know you know this. You're helping your small business owners to not have as many surprises, because as you know, with traditional health plans, who knows what your premium is going to be next year?
That's true.
And some people they've almost gone out of business, or maybe they have, trying to provide health care for their employees. I mean, look at you're in the North, the Midwest. Look at the automobile industries up
right
there, and it's the same thing. And so with HSAs, even though the premiums can go up, they don't go up not even close to the rates that the traditional insurance goes up at.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. And and you mentioned the auto companies. It's interesting because I have a customer in Central Ohio who has a small manufacturing company and competes with Honda, who happens to be doing very well, but competes with Honda for hiring employees.
Wow.
Now, how are you going to compete with a benefit package at Honda unless you can offer something?
Well, and the thing is you don't have to compete penny for penny.
Right.
All a small business owner has to do, any small business has to do, Maria, is to make a reasonable effort at benefits,
make it available,
and then turn on that small business charm.
Right.
It's you know, people can't withstand the charm of a small business. We're so huggable and lovable.
Well, it's part of being part of something that you feel some ownership in.
That's right.
You know, even though you may not be an owner on paper, you are, you know, there's something about that cohesiveness of that small family, that feeling that you get with a small business.
Well, and many stories have been told on this show about people who started with a small business, and then over a 10 or 20 year period, that employee became the owner.
Right.
So there is equity opportunity out there, no question about it.
Yeah.
Maria, thank you for being here. Good job today. Will you come back?
I'd love to.
I had a lot of fun. I hope you did.
I had a great time. Thanks, John.
We'll see you next time. By the way, give us your website.
Go to key.com/women or key.com/smallbiz.
Okay. Hey, check it out, folks, when you get a chance. Quick break. Right back with Bill Brand after these messages. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.